Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Okay, gang, we've got Football 52 rolling here on this Wednesday morning as we're recording this. You might be listening to it whenever, but Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, how are you doing this morning, my friend? Good to see you as always.
Yeah, I'm good. I feel like the tone of your question is, how are you doing coming off of a tight loss? And, like we've talked about before, it's Wednesday now, Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
And we've had a couple of days of, preparation and practice for the next opponent. So largely have moved on with optimism for the next. I'll never get over any of the losses. You know, the wins I almost can forget about, move on from, have to be reminded about certain things. But the losses really hurt and sting.
We were applauding you when you walked in last week, and you were kind of like, what are we doing here? What is this about? And we're like, you won. We're like, dude, it's Wednesday.
Yeah.
I don't even know what happened last weekend.
Yeah.
But that's what we hear, right? Whether it's cliche in sports or not, but the loss is, you hate to lose. You hate to lose more than you like to win.
Yeah.
Is that true? Is that accurate with you?
100%. Yeah, I've said it before. It's the relief sometimes of winning is the only feeling. It's really not that elation that that I think the players feel. And when I was a player, I felt more of that, the celebratory moments. And I think maybe as a coach, that's only going to occur on a championship, because everything else seems like, I think not good enough for what we want for the players.
Yeah.
You know, for how hard we ask them to work, it's like nothing's good except for winning it all.
Well, and for you guys, it's like as soon as that game's over, your brain's already going into, we gotta figure out how to bounce back next week. We gotta put a plan together. Players are, happy about the win, ready to just kind of take it easy for however many hours. If it's a loss, it's we're gonna, hang our head for a bit here and think about it. But then it's your job to quickly get right back to it and create the plan that you put in place for them to practice throughout the course of the week. So there's just not a lot of time mentally for that.
Right. Yeah. There's certainly no time to sit around and self-flagellate. And I mean, there's a process every week of taking a look at what's going well and what's going wrong, and trying to figure out, with the things that are going well, how much do we reinvest in that, right? Because you can only be so predictable.
Yeah.
And so, of the things that are going wrong, there's kind of that, just probably every business leader has those same decisions to make of, when things are not going well, do you cut them loose, or do you, in terms of plays, strategies, depth chart, whatever, do you cut that loose and move on from it? Do you pivot? Do you, invest in the things that you're doing better? So all of that is that part of that Sunday, Monday process. By the time the players are actually practicing on the field on Tuesday, there are, we've put in generally a 40-hour work week before Wednesday.
We've got a big schedule coming up, and we'll talk about it. Three ranked opponents coming up for you guys, with UC Davis, Montana State, and Northern Arizona.
Yeah.
Is in the top 25 as well. I think they're at 22. So we'll get into that. Before we get into the 4th-and-1, because you and I have already talked about it, and
sure,
I discussed this yesterday on my show, because we're getting texts, we're getting comments, like, you got to talk to Coach about that. And I said it on the air. I said, I already kind of know how this conversation is going to go, because it wasn't that long ago. It was against South Dakota, and it was a, why didn't you throw the ball? And and we went into that.
Yeah.
If you threw the – we'll get into the 4th-and-1. But my point is, I wanted to talk about this. Yesterday we went into detail on this. For the first time since I've been doing this show, this is – we are now critiquing, and you love that, evaluating whatever, a play call, a missed opportunity. Every game you guys have been in, every single game has been a tight game where it does come down to a couple of decisions. And I know there's a million decisions that lead up to that, But for the fans' sake, they look at that and go, well, you could have ran it there. You could have thrown it there. Why'd you call a timeout there? Yeah. Why didn't you call a timeout there? Whatever. I don't recall talking about the Bears in that way on my show over the years, and we've done it for a very long time. There's always been more of a sense of, well, the Bears lost. Move on. Is the former coach, does he even live in Greeley? Is the other coach, you know, how long is he? He's been there for a long time. Do you consider moving on, or is it more of just whatever? For the first time ever, we are actually getting people that are so invested in this, they're talking about a missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking that as the glass half full approach. I'm not trying to make excuses or anything like that, but I'll tell you what, I have had a lot of fun each and every week watching this UNC Bears team, and it is getting to the point where fans are watching, more are watching. I'm getting people up north watching in Wyoming and Fort Collins, and they're starting to ask these questions like, well, why didn't they do it? They're interested. They're invested, and I've never experienced that with the Bears since I've been up here doing this stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, speaking of, you know, I appreciate that you're kind of setting the table there to ask a tough question, but you know, we know each other well enough now. Like, you've never seen me with you or any other media member or fan, for that matter, bristle at a tough question. That's I think when you on occasion when you see a coach in a press conference just kind of like lose their stuff, you know, on a question, I think you're probably looking at a coach who it is probably time for them to move on.
Yeah.
You know, it's generally like an older coach who's had a lot of success in the past, and then they feel like they're not, you know, they're entitled not to have to answer that kind of question, not to be questioned, right? And you see that, and I won't mention any names, but we've all seen that type of interview, right? But you've never seen that from me, and hopefully you never will, because what you're talking about with people asking that question, okay, why did he throw the ball?
Yeah.
Why didn't he run the ball? That would have worked every time, you know? Mm-hmm. And like you say, it doesn't. But we call that resulting. You know, it's resulting logic. So you take a look at the results and then you backtrace and say, well, you should have done this other thing. And we actually do that. Like, our staff does that. And so I sat in with our offensive staff and we talked about all the things that we could have done in that moment. But here's, you know, I think maybe what you're asking for and other people is, what was the thought process then?
Yeah.
And so I can share that. I can give you insight on that. So we did. Part of our collective team memory is we had a first and goal on the 1 yard line against South Dakota with the game on the line. It was about the same number of seconds left in the game, 40 seconds. And my directive to the offensive coordinator in that moment was run it 3 times. And we did have, Coach Walter Shad said, should we put a pass option on any of them? And I said, yeah, that's a good idea. If they leave somebody naked out there, make sure that you throw it. So that was the philosophy. Slightly different situation because we also knew that we could kick a field goal on fourth down potentially and tie the game and go to overtime. So a little more conservatism was warranted in that situation because you don't want to, you know, take a sack or throw an interception on a pass in that situation and then be in a position where the field goal is not as likely or not possible, right? So in this past game, we had a 3rd-and-2 and we spread it out, ran the football. Matthias Price, the ball carrier, ran it behind Lincoln Faupuli, the left guard, and there was an RPO on the play, and defense was, pretty aggressive, but Eric made the decision live, hand the ball off, mm-hmm. and Matthias fought, and the offensive line fought, and we got a yard, and so then it was 4th-and-1. Now, if I would have called timeout in that moment, and this is kind of the job of the head coach, if I would have called timeout in that moment and brought the whole team up and said, hey, fellas, here's what we're going to do. We're going to spread them out. If they leave Carver or Braden or anybody in a one-on-one situation, we're going to pull the ball out and throw it, but we're going to have a run option here, and if they're spread out worried about our receivers that have been gashing them, ball's going to Matthias. Every guy on that sideline would have said, let's go, coach. Mm-hmm. That's what we do, right? And not out of support for me or the decision. It's just like that's what got us there.
Yeah.
The spread RPO game and the run-pass option. Eric Gibson's ability to see that and make the right decisions all game long and our receivers' ability a lot – like. So here's an interesting thought. I'm not giving you much of a chance to talk here.
No,
just,
keep going.
Yeah, here's an interesting thought. Of anybody who's questioning that, did they actually go back and watch the play again? Because what you'll see is run blocking by the offensive line. That was a run play called. Mm. Our quarterback made the decision, which was granted to him by the offensive coordinator and the head coach, if it rolls all the way up to me. It was granted to him to pull it and throw it if he sees that opportunity. And so that's what he did. And we're all behind – as a team, we're all behind him because we all knew that that was a run-pass option, right? It wasn't – my team's not saying, hey, Lamb, why'd you throw it? Like, no, that wasn't the play call. All game long we had done that. And a lot of people, I think, to kind of illustrate it further, I think a lot of people think right now that we throw a bunch of deep passes. We actually throw a bunch of hitches and slants. But against press coverage, those convert to deep passes. And the last couple of opponents have tried to dare our receivers and tried to get up and play press coverage. And so many of these things that fans or media are seeing, these are conversions of play calls, which is very common in offensive football right now to have all these options, you know. And so that's what the play call was. We certainly own. I owned it to the team after. If the play call doesn't work – nobody would like to go back in time more than the offensive coordinator, the quarterback, the head coach, all the people that kind of had decisions on that play. Nobody would more than us would like to go back in time and try something different. Like, I can accept that. Yeah. And that's why you won't see – because we go through all that, that's why you won't see me getting upset about a question is because it's like it's already been thought through and I've already taken responsibility. Like you don't get to a head coaching position in Division I football without being willing to take responsibility.
Yeah. Well, and I think even for me, like I watch a lot of football. I couldn't have told you while I'm watching that the offensive line were actually in a run block. Yeah. I couldn't have. And again, the angles, what we actually get as fans, we get the ball. We see the ball where that's going.
Right.
So for us, we don't really get to focus on that side. And that's why I think it's important. So many people like to throw out blown coverage. Oh, that cornerback just absolutely got beat. Well, how do you know the safety wasn't supposed to pick up after 15 yards?
You don't, yeah.
And that corner was supposed to let off of that receiver after 15 yards and then maybe go into the, down to the flats or something like that. So it's easy to say, oh, that corner just getting roasted out there. Yeah. Well, maybe it was the safety's mistake on that side of it, or there was miscommunication on that side of the ball. And all this being said is not an excuse, but if it would have been a strict run and you don't get it, the exact same question would be, Coach, you saw this against South Dakota. Right. Why didn't you throw it? And I'm telling you, me, honestly, I would have said the same thing. I would have been asking you to say, what was the decision there? You got stuck. You got 1 yard on the third and two or whatever it was. What made you so confident that you were going to pick up one more yard when they probably knew it was coming?
Yeah.
And then so we'd be asking the same thing. I'm not asking it in a way to present an excuse, but I always think when it comes down to a throw or pass, it's always just a – now, if you have Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl like the Seattle Seahawks, that's a different story, and it's a weird kind of throw right there that apparently the Patriots have been practicing for. But I just think that it's always fascinating when you need to ask coach why they threw the ball there. I'm like, well, the ball was thrown to Carver Cheeks, and if memory serves – he was catching everything in this game. He had 9 receptions for 223 yards and 3 touchdowns. A lot of teams go that route. Yeah. They go up with the hot hand at that point. He was the hottest hand. Oh, and Braden Monroe had a great game. Your running backs had a great game. Matthias Price had a great game. But he had the hottest hand in this game. So
you just described, I mean, the exact words that I gave to Walter Shad, because we had a timeout there before the fourth down because the clock was running. I wanted to save the time. If we were to get the first down but not the touchdown, I wanted to make sure that we could clock it. And then – so we discussed all those scenarios. But my feedback to Coach Walterscheid, to Justin, as he was considering a few different play calls in that situation was I said leave it in the players' hands because of what you say. Like our version of beast mode of Marshawn Lynch is Matthias. We believe in him in that moment. That's why he was in there. We love Eric Gibson's decisions on – RPOs. We love going to our receivers and especially Carver on that night. Braden had a huge night as well. We love throwing to those guys when we get isolated one-on-one coverage. Our team believes in that ability. But it's a fair criticism to say, well, you should have done the other thing that would have worked.
Oh, yeah.
It's so fair. And yeah. We're in it. We're there. I'm there to accept that.
This is why with you, I never feel a sense of, oh, I need to kind of rework this question to make you, you know, not hate me.
Yeah, right.
But I also want to be logical when I'm asking the question too, because I played high school football. I play Madden football now on video games. And I can definitely see a situation where I'm going, all right, if I run the ball and just get stuffed at the wall, that's it. Yeah. If I have an option, oh, maybe they are paying too much attention to Carver out here, Braden. Let's make sure, make that decision to run the ball here. But if you see something with one-on-one out there, that at least keeps the play alive and a ball is in the air for anything to happen at some point. So when I'm first watching it, I'm like, okay, is Hank Gibbs going to come in, or is there going to be some kind of wildcat thing with Mathias options there? And at that moment, I'm going, I would have liked to see that.
Yeah.
But then when that play and the way you describe it too, with several days to sit and think about it, it's just hard for me to be that guy that's like, you should have done the thing that would have worked, because we don't know that thing would have worked.
Well, let me tell you, that was discussed. We're talking a mile a minute, me and the offensive coordinator in those timeouts, in those situations especially where the game is on the line. And we talked about Wildcat. We talked about Hank. But here's the thing. You normally don't have a Wildcat offense in a situation where the clock is grinding down to zero.
Yeah.
Because you're, in a two-minute situation, because that generally is going to bleed the clock. And so if the scenario that I brought up, well, if we get the first down, then what? Can we haven't practiced spiking the ball with Hank under center or another Wildcat option under center. And what formation would we even be in, right? Because we would have bigger personnel on the field with most of the package that Hank runs. And so we would kind of have to coach that up really quickly. And in the end, it was decided like, hey, the look we got on all of these short yardage plays when we're in a spread offense is exactly what we want. It's either a spread out look and the run game will be there for a yard and we like our guys, or they're packing the box on us and we got a one-on-one out there. And so, yeah, I still feel great about that ability. There was some fortune on Sac State's part. They got a fingertip on the ball, which negated the pass interference. I mean, Carver was literally bear hugged on the play, and the officials made the right call, because on a tipped pass, it could have been called defensive holding, which a tipped pass would not negate.
Yeah,
but it happens so fast. I'm in the 1 yard line, and I'm not going to be one to beg for a call in that situation with the game on the line. I want the officials to let the game and the players play it out. So I want Carver to fight through that as he did and tried. And, I want to back Eric on his decision on the option play. And, the only regret is that it didn't work.
Yeah.
Not that it was the wrong play. If it was the wrong play call, I'd stand up and say that. But, it's an interesting analogy you bring up in Super Bowl with Beast Mode, right? Because that was a pass play.
Yeah.
That was a decision by the coordinator to take it out of the running back's hands. We didn't do that. We decided to take what the defense, quote unquote, gives us. And that was the decision in the moment. And by the way, it was wrong, because it didn't work. I can accept that.
Well, we might not even be having this conversation if a few plays before that, if the Braden Monroe touchdown had stood. The call was that he stepped out of bounds and didn't reestablish himself in bounds. And the camera angles were interesting on ESPN+, but the way the commentators were talking was like, he didn't. But I thought, we're waiting forever for this call. You've been in this situation every single game.
Yep.
Where you have to wait for a call that determines the fate. Again, you still have to make a stop on defense. But
touchdown call on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah. A stop on defense against a triple option team.
They called the touchdown.
Yeah.
And I felt at the time, from just what I saw, that he did establish himself and that he was in bounds for long enough to establish. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, that's what I saw. I don't know if the television camera showed it, but I had a long conversation after the replay official overturned the touchdown called on the field, because and I'm not allowed to. So we have all the video. that the replay official has. We have it on the sideline. We have it on an iPad. But it's against the rules for me to approach the official with the iPad in my hand. Hmm. I don't know if you knew that.
That's just weird.
Yes, right. But like, yeah. So it is weird, right? Because a lot of these things are kind of done in the dark from a coaching perspective.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. Like, why can't I show you? Like, it's right here.
I'm looking at the same thing you're
looking at.
What are you seeing
Let's
that I'm
discuss,
not seeing?
Right?
Yeah.
I've burned a timeout to have the right to discuss this.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but I got to respect the rules. And so I give the iPad to an assistant and I go out and I say, hey, you know, I know the official. I've known him for over 20 years now. He's been working in the Big Sky. Hey, here's what I'm seeing. What are you guys seeing here? You know, and he said, well, we zoomed in. Mm. Okay. I'm like, it's not unclear to me. Like, zooming's just going to make it bigger.
Yeah.
Like
it's not really a zoom in kind of.
Yeah. My eyes aren't bad. Like, I don't know what's.
It's not like a catch call or anything
like
that.
You're touching the sideline or you're not. Zooming in doesn't help that. I didn't say all that. I thanked him for, giving me what he could in that moment. But I had already, we were lined up for the PAT when the replay official buzzed in, and then when it looked like, okay, this replay is going to take a moment, I brought the whole team up or the whole offense and said, okay, we're prepared for two scenarios here. We're either going for two because at that point we had a 1-point lead. So yeah. A PAT is not going to give us much. We got to be prepared to go for two and we got to be prepared to go back. That was a, pass interference call committed against Braden. But if they overturn the touchdown, then we got to be prepared. Okay, we've got first and 10 at midfield. So I couldn't really belabor the point with the officials and lose my cool in that moment. It's just like the Colorado State moment. Like we had 8 seconds left at Colorado State. We had another opportunity to try and create another miracle, right? And so I don't want the players to see me losing my composure, even though, to my eyes, I thought clearly that Braden had reestablished himself in bounds. And so I love replay. I love where the game has gone with that, but it has really burned us this year in two huge moments.
I am all or nothing on replay. You either review it all or you don't review anything. I am that guy. I don't like I hate the process of taking forever to review these calls.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the times they sometimes just don't get it right. They review it and they don't get it right. So I'm at the point like, what are we doing? Why even have it?
Yeah.
And I know I always get asked that, well, if it benefits your team, you would be for it. Nah, not if I called it and I said, this is how I want it to be, because I've seen it too often where we spend another crazy amount of time looking over this and it just, I hate sitting and waiting. It's, yeah. I mean, imagine for you, it's like quadruple that. And a lot of times we just don't get it right. Now, you interpreting the rules to me or discussing that with me a little more makes me feel a little stronger about that, because I kind of just went, well, they're saying he needs to establish himself in bounds. What does that mean? Just literally standing back, just getting back in bounds?
Yeah.
Is that basically what it means?
It's 1 foot. He has to touch in bounds with some part of his body while not touching out of bounds.
Yeah.
And so the frozen shot that will forever be in my mind is his – right foot is, to me, inbounds and not any part of it out. He was up on his right toe as he came back in, and then his left foot was up in the air. And so the next time his left foot stepped down, it was inbounds. And so I still, to this moment, don't know what the official saw, because all he said was, well, we zoomed. And so I'm assuming that he's saying that the right foot that I thought was in, they thought was out or partially out. So that, that's – whatever the officials call is what it was, that's what it became. Whether they were right or wrong is kind of like a moot point, right? Like I am 100% convinced that officials don't have an agenda. No.
Yeah, and when I go into this, I'm definitely not one of those guys.
Yeah.
I'm not they had a few bucks on the game, or it'd look better if set better for the whatever that means.
Right.
I typically don't go there,
yeah.
But I do feel like sometimes maybe in the moment they're just seeing something completely different, or they're interpreting it differently than the way maybe because it's easy for us to Google real quick. What is establishing yourself like while I'm sitting on the couch? And okay, well, according to that, he's got it. He's got a body part that's in,
mm-hmm.
and it looks from what we're seeing that he is in at this point. So very interesting finish for you guys for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's another really disappointing break, you know, and as you well know, I've, you know, taken the long-term view of building this program from day one, and I can see now where we're at. Okay, we've gone from a team that needs four turnovers to be in a game or to win a game to now we're turning the ball over four times and we're still on the road against a good opponent, 20,000 people in the stands against a team that's had the number one recruiting class in the nation for 2 years straight and number one in the conference and number one in the nation this last year. Like, okay, our guys, there is so much growth. And that's what I told our team after. I said, fellas, I'm so proud of the way you guys fought to the end. It's what we had talked about all week. Like, if we were going to win that game, it was going to be because we're going to fight to the end.
Yeah.
And I said, you guys have flipped this program, and we still have room to grow, and we still need to grow, and being close is not good enough. But I want you guys to know how proud I am of you. It's the same coaches, but you guys are different players. Same people, better players.
Yeah, and every game has been, and I'm not trying to do the orange slice thing, but where we are watching this team, I mean, last week, it's like, oh, you guys could beat Sac State and maybe be ranked, maybe,
right,
depending on how things go. It doesn't, like, wash away losses, but it does 100% show the growth that this program has seen. If you're denying that, you're not paying attention. If you're just flat out looking at win-loss,
sure,
then,
yeah,
and that's what a lot of people unfortunately do.
It's fair.
But that's – see, and I think that's ridiculous. Like, I'm looking at – I mean, the Denver Broncos are 5-2, but I'm looking at that going, it doesn't really feel like 5-2. You guys are 3-4. It doesn't really feel like 3-4, yeah, on the positive side. So I want to be fair on both sides of that. There's no – every single game is must-see television for you guys. Right. I mean, every game, and I'm feeling that throughout the state.
Yeah, and you know, anybody who really cares enough to really be critical, dive into this thing and see, you know, see the difference in operating budgets, facilities, get behind the fact that the UNC Bears have had zero recruits with inducements.
Yeah.
We have never paid a recruit. Sac State added 73 new players, 40 of them transfers, a five-star quarterback. They're paying players to be there. And that's you know, that's their reality, that's their thing. I'm not saying that's wrong or right, but the fact that our homegrown boys,
yeah,
are just straight building it on the practice field and in the weight room and have every opportunity to win, if that's not encouraging to somebody, then I don't know if they're ever going to be satisfied with anything but a win. But me coming here knowing exactly, you know, what the plan was to build this thing, it was never going to be a snap of my fingers and all of a sudden we've got this amazing product in front of us. Like,
yeah,
maybe somebody else could do that. I didn't. I don't. That was not the plan, to snap my fingers or to go raise $6 million bucks to go recruit a class.
Yeah, it's very much you see what's happening. And Nick Saban was talking about how many coaches are getting fired these days. And
yeah,
he was like, the NIL stuff and all the boosters having so much control now, that's 100% contributing to it. There's not a lot of programs, and we're seeing some of that at the FCS level, that will give a coach the time that they really need to try to get these homegrown guys. It is quickly get in the portal, get a bunch of portal guys. Oh, if that doesn't work, well, then you're not good.
Right.
You're not a good coach because you went in the portal and got guys that were supposed to be better. But also, we don't want you to build up guys because we don't have time for that. So
the portal kids cost,
yeah,
money.
Yeah.
You know, and so what am I going to do?
They enter the portal for a reason.
Yeah.
A lot of that reason is to see what kind of money they can get.
Exactly.
Because they only have so – a lot of these guys are like, I only have so long to play, yeah, so I might as well enter the portal and see if there's thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars out there.
Our secret sauce is going to be retaining the players that we develop right here. Getting the undervalued recruit and retaining them. And that's going to be a big challenge because everyone's eyes are open. So for any questions like that, questions about me and my ability or my offensive coordinator's ability to call play calls in clutch moments, okay, fair, whatever. It's a criticism we accept and expect. But, you know, around the country, there's a recognition that the Bears have players.
Yeah.
And that in itself is an amazing story because nobody wanted these guys
except
the Bears. And now everybody wants them.
And some of those guys, Carver Cheeks, Braden Monroe, who had a phenomenal game too, Mathias Price was really good. Eric Gibson, he's had some turnovers, but he's put up some big numbers. What is that process like in the re-recruiting? Because obviously we've talked about Carver Cheeks' situation and entering the portal in the offseason, but then coming back. Do you find yourself in a situation where you're already doing the re-recruiting thing? Like, because they're probably receiving messages.
Yes.
Not that that's legal, but they're probably receiving messages,
backdoor
right?
Backdoor stuff. Absolutely. Yeah. They're Sacramento State's player personnel guy literally like ran over to Carver after the game to make sure that he established a relationship there.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's kind of absurd sometimes, but not illegal, right? Like, he's on the sideline.
No,
he's a
quote-unquote
coach, staffer. Yeah. But, yeah, it was like, you know, it wasn't their defensive coordinator or their cornerbacks coach that went over. And, like, in the old days, that's what it'd be. If a player had a great game against you, then maybe as the position coach or the coordinator that's trying to defend that guy, you'd hustle over and say, just want you to know. And I still do that. It's part of my process. I have a list of two or three of the opponent players that I want to go and try and find after I shake hands with the head coach. And that's kind of the pure way, and maybe some people would call it old-fashioned. But now you typically will get that. So to answer your question, though, how does that process start to shake out? First, it's just how we treat our players on the daily and what their role is here and making sure that they are communicated with, making sure that they are supported, making sure that they just enjoy their experience here and that we give them a fair, honest evaluation and that we continue to coach them. Like yesterday, I was giving Carver a hard time, for example, because he took an outside running play in practice and nobody on the defense touched him. And it's a thud up drill. And so like by thud up, you either like you reach down, you tag a guy on the hips, you get yourself in a position to tackle, or you even just wrap him up and hold him up and nobody even put a finger on him. Mm. And so I went over to him, you know, after, hey, Carver, you know, you came up from punt gunner. You came up from safety. You didn't get here by guys not touching you, being afraid to touch you. Like, I love that your teammates understand your value, but you better call them out, man. I don't know what's going on right here. You're out here practicing with no contact, and we're just kind of having a joke. But that's got to be number one, is just communicating with them. They need to know that we're going to continue to invest in them, build them up, make them the best player that we can. The second part is, what do they want?
Mm-hmm.
If a guy just wants a bigger stadium, we're not having a conversation.
Yeah.
Let me help you find that, you know, the bigger stadium you can find. If a guy just wants a higher level of competition, okay, let me help you find that. But what's lost and what these street agents don't understand, and the NFL does, the transfer kids aren't making it to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a development sometimes. The development can be retarded when a player jumps ship and goes to a new system of offense or defense. A lot of these big schools have enough money to entice these kids and pay them hundreds of thousands of dollars just for depth.
Yeah.
And so now all of a sudden you could go from a school that, you know, is putting you out there out front to, you know, a school that's just got you for depth. And so that's really where these players need great advice, and that's where we can help them. Like I can help all these guys understand what it is that they're considering going to.
These are the things that I look at too, Coach. In a lot of the teams that I follow at the FBS level, they'll get guys that were pushed down the depth chart, but they're at big schools. They're at bigger schools, but they're like seventh, eighth. They come to these schools, some of these FBS in the area, still don't do anything.
Yeah.
And so now, okay, they got to a great school, big stadium, all that stuff, they're a depth guy, but then they leave, they go to a smaller school, and they're still kind of not utilized the way that they think they should be utilized. So when I look at Carver Cheeks, it's like, yeah, you could go to a whatever, a Mountain West, maybe even bigger, maybe even a Power 4 type, but you would not go to the NFL. I mean, maybe. I mean, I'm just saying,
yeah,
but you could get lost on that depth chart. I see that more often than we see the opposite take place.
If I'm being very honest with a player like Carver, and we're using Carver, for example, because he had a great game.
Yeah.
He's having a great season. I believe he's an NFL player. I've told him that since high school.
Yeah.
He's got the height, the speed, and the work ethic to make it to the NFL. And I saw it at a different position, to be very honest. I saw it at safety first was I thought it was his highest potential. And part of that is, you know, coming out of UNC, you know, he would really stand out in that way. I saw him as a Miles Killebrew type of player who has now played 10 years in the NFL from Southern Utah. And so, yeah, I mean, we've made the switch to receiver. I can't look a player in the eye and manipulate him. So if Carver tells me if I go to this Power Four school, do you still think I can make it to the NFL? I'm going to say absolutely, right? But let's, you know, let's take a look at who they've got coming back. Let's ask the questions. And by the way, because I am so close with so many of these Power Four coaches, I can find out what they should be paying you because that'll tell you whether you're the number one option.
Right.
And for you know, let's not even talk about Carver. For any player that's thinking about transferring, that may not be their concern, is to be the number one option. These guys have confidence in themselves. And so, hey, maybe they want to go as a depth guy and work their way up. I respect that. What I'm looking for are the players that want to be here first. And then, okay, well, the rules have changed. So now I can give a guy, the old rule was I can only give a guy 100% of a scholarship value. Now, even though we don't have a lot of NIL or revenue sharing money that I can give them, I can give them 125% of a scholarship, 150% of a scholarship. Theoretically, I could give them two or three scholarships. Now, that's going to start to hurt the team at some point, but that's the decisions I have to make going forward. So we can now, quote unquote, pay players. We can't do it like Sac State. We can't do it like the top schools in our conference that are actually giving them – you know, cash not out of the scholarship pool. They're giving them cash out of the cash pool.
Yeah.
So we can't do it the same, but we can retain some guys. You know, if it's a tens of thousands of dollars, we might be able to compete with that.
Well, and here's the other thing I look at too. These numbers. And this isn't basketball. This isn't Dalton Connect. You know, because Dalton Connect was basically putting up the same numbers when he went to when he left and went to Tennessee. He was the same numbers. He was doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just he was doing it on a bigger stage. It's different in football. For Carver, I look at it and go, he has 44 receptions for 725 yards and 5 touchdowns. If he keeps on that path, he'll easily crack the 1,000-yard mark. Does that again next year. I absolutely believe he could get drafted coming out of UNC.
Sure.
And if he doesn't have those numbers and goes elsewhere and he's a third or fourth guy, but you're playing it, name the place, Washington State, then you're at like 30 catches a year or the next year and you get like 500, 400 yards, your chances go way down. And if it's like you were the man and everybody knew you were the man, you have other great players, but Carver's kind of a stud, but you're still able to pull off those kind of numbers. There's FCS players. You just mentioned one of them. There's FCS players that can get drafted into the NFL, not just sign on as a free agent.
Yeah. The best way to look at the NFL has all kinds of studies because it's their very livelihood, right? So schools like Alabama, the Power Four schools, they put the most players in the NFL, but they also have the lowest retention rate because when you come out of those schools, you have a label that really means something. And even to general managers and scouts, that label is kind of enticing. You come out of a smaller school, a group of five or an FCS or something like that, that's a different type of label, and those guys last longer on average in the NFL because there's a pride in from the general manager or the scout or the head coach that they've found something, they've developed something. It's easier just to flip the roster and get more Ohio State, Alabama, LSU type of players. Like it's a factory. But these other ones that have kind of worked their way up. So yeah, going back to a guy like Carver, like he's already proven to work his way up. And if he wants to go and get a different experience, you know, doing something like that, then that's something that I have to respect. I'm never going to tell him he's going to have a better opportunity to develop here. What I can say is, look, you have been and you will be continue to be our number one guy. You continue to do what you do. You'll have this type of opportunity. But I can't look a guy in the eye and say, if you do this other thing, it's not going to work out well for you, because who am I to say that?
Yeah, well, and I know we spent a lot of time on Carver, but he was named the NFFCC Player of the Week. The National Football Foundation Colorado Chapter Player of the Week. His numbers were just – I looked at it and thought that's for sure some kind of a record there and what he was able to do, but it was the second highest single game total in UNC's Division I era, according to you guys at UNCBears.com. and fourth all-time in school history. The performance also marked his third 100-yard game of the season and his first career three-touchdown game. So when you put those big numbers up, it does lead to a conversation like this.
Absolutely. Yeah, and he's Carver's been humbled. That's the thing. My job is to find the next Carver. Is that possible? Somebody wants to say that's disrespectful, whatever. But like Carver, if you bring him in, he's going to credit Braden Monroe for taking some of the coverage his way, right?
Yeah.
And he's going to credit Eric Gibson. He's going to credit the offensive line. He's going to credit the running backs and Charlie Garrison, who's drawing a lot of attention over the middle, right? Like there's just a lot going on right now for this team, and guys they're all raising their stock, you know, and yeah, at some point here, I'll have a conversation with all of our key guys, and then that will lead me toward, okay, you know, are you open to staying and being retained, or is it, you know, hey, next man up?
Yeah.
And like, you know, this time last year, nobody was talking about retaining all of our players and that being the key to our development, right?
Yeah.
Like we know what we're doing here. We know how to recruit. We know how to develop. And Carver is just as Dalton Knecht was and Langston Reynolds and all these guys with basketball, you know, give credit to Coach Smiley and the program. They've continued to find that guy every year who leads them. And it's a major, major undertaking. It's a major task. It would be a huge hit to lose some of our guys. But we're not going to sit around and cry about it if that's what happens.
Yeah. But, well, and so much about it, too, is finding the right place for you. I've seen stories where guys are doing awesome. They transfer. They get forgotten. They transfer again. Oh, they take off. There's a guy in Fort Collins that did that on the basketball side of things. It is a gamble. It is a huge gamble. And is it worth that gamble? Because Carver specifically, but what, another year? Do you want to take that final year and gamble and go relearn a new system, a new coach, and all that stuff?
Maybe.
Maybe it would pay off.
I know we have players in our program that are aspiring to be the next Carver Cheeks.
Yeah.
I know we have, and we've recruited that. And I know we have players in our program that are aspiring to be the next Braden Monroe, aspiring to be the next, you know, what Cam Chapa. Like, there's a lot of players that are going to have a lot of options. And one of those options would be for those guys to band together and say, what's going to change my life the most is to win a championship at UNC. So, coach, what can you do for us? What can you do, you know, in terms of revenue share and stuff like that? What can you do to make it possible for us to stay?
People that are listening to this podcast, that's a good point to bring up. We've got our great supporters like Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance. Mm-hmm. But if they're listening to this podcast and they're like, how do we get involved? How do we help out with that kind of thing? What do they do, coach?
You know, I think that's never been my MO. I'm more of a relationship person. I want to get to know – I want to inspire people to help the Bears through the way that we're doing it, right? And so if Mark Larson or some other business owner or person with means out there says, wait, look at what they're doing in Greeley. They've built a team without recruiting inducements.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like I've built my business. You know, there were people there were people that started with more, and now my business is bigger. Like that's the kind of inspiration that I'm looking to have happen. And it's just, and now there's so many ways to support the team, build the team, all that stuff. That's not part of my skill set, though.
Yeah,
to go out and say, I need this amount of money for this player because I know how quickly that can crumble. I see it. Well, you take Sacramento State, for example. You take Idaho, the last team that we beat. They put all their money into a quarterback. The quarterback got hurt.
Yeah.
And now the whole team is wondering what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Idaho coach had the hurt quarterback take the first string warm-ups in the warm-up before our game. What kind of message did that send to the rest of the team? You know, I don't know. I'm not that coach. I didn't think it through like him. But I was like, this is bizarre.
Yeah.
And we never want to be that in Greeley. So anything that can kind of happen more organically, I think, is more Greeley. And we a lot of times we're referring to ourselves now as Greeley State. The idea behind that is like the come up, the on the rise. Like this used to be known as Greeley State, and it's a little more of
I like that,
a scallywag type name for the university, right? Yeah. Like I don't know if our president appreciates us referring to it as Greeley State, right? But it's kind of a throwback idea, and it's also like, look, Greeley State's come a long way. The Bears can come a long way. And we have to adopt some of that scallywag mentality. If we're comparing our stadium to other schools in the conference, if we're comparing our budgets, if we're comparing the gear, the sweatsuits, the NIL, all that stuff, we're always going to come up short. But if we can just compare our on-field product and work on making that the best that we can, then we've accomplished something not just like to celebrate for the year. We've accomplished something that will change lives.
And I like the Greeley State thing. I like when you guys did the school buses to go to Fort Collins to kind of, we know what people say. We don't have the resources. We don't have lights on our field. So let's go show, we don't have a lot of resources. We're going to pull up. We're going to give you guys a football game. And then the very next year, we're going to beat you, which you did. All those things. We're going to do that stuff. And you're right. You're not going to get on here. Even though I gave you an opportunity to, you're not going to get on here and say, for $3.99 a month, you can support the Bears. But
all we need is 1,000 people to give $1,000.
But if there is,
and you can see so and so stay.
Yeah. If there is, like, because I look at it, even from me running a business, I go, it'd be pretty cool to have Carver Cheeks on every single week talking to Carver. So he would be working for it too. The our NIL stuff we do is, I mean, poor Brock Wisney for UNC basketball. He's sitting with me this year. He has to sit down and answer my stupid questions. He has to come prepared. He has to give me information that Smiley probably doesn't want him to give.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. But they are doing some. He has to commit to it. He has to drive here. He has to be a part of it. So I know that might be more of the things you're talking about too. Like, hey, listen, I'm not going to say throw money at us and all is fixed. But if there are players out there that you like sticking around, that would be cool for them to do something that's actually good for both sides, not just here's money because you're you.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And the more organic it is, the more Greeley State it is, in my opinion. And the more it fits within our mantra, like this is a bootstrap program. Like and back to Carver, nobody espouses that and exemplifies that more than him, right? An unrecruited player, one option, comes here as a safety, because that's what we asked him to play, earns his first stripes on special teams. You know, he's made 15, 20 tackles over the course of his career on special teams, gets his way into the starting lineup at safety, sees a different path for himself and jumps over to offense, improves himself there, jumps into the portal, has the humility to come back and say, I made a mistake. There's no way I'm going to go play against the Bears, in FCS football.
Yeah.
Will you take me back? I'll volunteer. I'll walk on. Like, there's nobody that espouses that more. So, to make like a public plea, like, hey, pay this guy. It's like, that's not us and that's not him.
Yeah.
He's not going to stay for that. If he stays, it's going to be for the right reasons. And obviously, we got to make sure that a guy's not walking away from life-changing money,
right.
So there is that reality too, and I won't shy away from that. But when I say the first step in all this in retaining talent that we've developed, the first step is to know what they want.
Yeah.
I'm being genuine about that.
And you have
got to start with them.
You have been extremely, vocal about that. Like, hey, if there's a guy that thinks he can go somewhere else, and we think he could too, but we want to make sure he's going to the right spot. Help him figure out what his evaluation is too. Because if you're leaving, you're leaving for a couple reasons. You want to try to get maybe a clearer path to the NFL. Or you're like, I'm only going to play college football for so long. Is there money I could go get while I'm playing now? Because that's available to players. You guys are going to sit down and look at that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all I want with every player is a conversation. And I want a relationship with them from now, 15 years from now, 30 years from now. I want to get an announcement to their when they get married and things like that. That's and I can't do that by playing a businessman first. I've got to play the mentor first. And we recruited all these guys with the idea, like, I don't know if you know this or if we've talked about it before, but if we're recruiting a guy that has a lot of options, we go cold on him on purpose. We call it icing him.
Yeah,
we ice him because we know that this place can't be built with people who think we owe them something.
Yeah.
And so we can't 2, 3, 4 years later flip that and have players, thinking that we owe them something. And that's the great part about this team right now. There's no entitlement. There's no expectation that they're going to make, as much money or have as much gear or play in as big a stadium. We don't need or have the ability to bring Lil Yachty in after our games for a concert, right? Like, that's just not us.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Forgot about that.
It's not us.
Yeah.
And we're not going to lose that. Never in my time here will we lose that. So even if somebody stepped up and started to give all of our, you know, players that have market value, you know, the money to stay, my question at that point to those players would be like, hey, look, you know, nothing's promised here in terms of starting job, targets. Like, you're going to work every day. We're not protecting you. You are the same humble person, and I'm the same humble coach. Our relationship doesn't change. Don't let the money change you.
Yeah.
That'll be the next challenge.
Well, and I appreciate you going there with us on that one, Coach. Did you hear about – I mean, obviously, this is during the game. The last one for you, by the way. Yeah. Dr. Luke Wood, the president of Sacramento State, was on the broadcast, I think, around the time you guys were in the lead at one point in this game because it was around halftime. They were previewing the next game, the Montana game, which is huge. And he was kind of tongue-in-cheek, but he said, it's going to be great. I mean, we're looking forward to playing the Montana Pandas. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, the Montana Grizzlies? Grizzlies. I think that's their name. Yeah, right. So, you know, they're certainly a great team, but they haven't played nobody this season. I mean, let's just be real. Well, not only are you putting down Montana, you're putting down a good chunk of your Big Sky opponents, too, and all that. Like, they played Idaho. They played Idaho State. They played Cal Poly. So I thought that was really weird. And the fact they were, like, really previewing that one during this game while you guys were winning was really strange to me.
When I saw that, I felt bad for the Sac State football program. Originally, when I started to see all the things Sac State was doing, I thought, okay, here's a guy who gets it. Like, this president is saying, look, you know, none of these schools in the Power Four become that if they didn't have some type of vision way back and start investing in football as a growth opportunity for the university, right? Like, so from that perspective, I was like, oh, Sac State gets it. And 20 years from now, everybody's going to be saying, look at the vision this guy had. But then once I saw this thing, I was like so disappointed for the coach because I know Coach Marion.
Yeah.
And I know that he wants the right things for his players, and they're going to respect the opponent. And you can't line up and smash heads with somebody for 3 hours and feel anything but respect for that person. You might celebrate your victory. You might, you know, there might be stuff that looks like taunting to the fans, but there's so much mutual respect gained. So I can tell you that would have been horrifying for their players and coaches to have to, like, now they've got to deal with that. In the end, it's not going to have an effect on the game. That's not a lot. Like, Montana's not going to come and beat Sac State because the president's
called them the Pandas.
I mean, I looked into it a little bit more. It looks like that president is a guy who's kind of gotten a lot of attention over the years by saying controversial things.
Yeah.
Some people just, you know, if that's what got him into that position, he's got to keep doing that. That's what he was hired for, is to be controversial, it looks like.
Well, and Sac State's kind of controversial on the football side anyway, because where are they going next year on the football side?
Yeah, they don't have a home yet. What they've decided is they're, you know, essentially they decided to outspend everybody in the Big Sky and leave the Big Sky behind. But nobody to this point at the FBS has invited them, and so they don't. And then the NCAA has said, well, you have to have a conference now in order to make the jump from FCS to FBS. So it looks like they're going to go FCS independent and play an FBS schedule, because at that point, as an independent, they don't, you know, like, we play Colorado State, right? Well, they can play all the schools in the Mountain West, theoretically, or all the schools around the country, or Ohio State, or whoever they want to play. And so, yeah, that's where they're at. I don't know, you know, right decision, wrong decision, whatever, but I commend anybody who's striving to be, you know, ambitious.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and just with all that kind of being known, and then also throwing shade at, well, Montana hasn't played anybody. Well, they played three pretty good, pretty middle of the road to good Big Sky schools. Oh, and by the way, you guys were favored to beat UNC by 10.5 points, and it did come down to a missed call or whatever, or a final call.
3 yards
in this game.
You want to
3 yards,
say.
Braden Monroe touchdown, whatever.
Yeah.
Coach, always appreciate it, man. We covered a lot of ground today. And this is the cool thing. When you get big-time players, and I know Carver's not the only one, we're going to give the props out to everybody. We've been doing that a lot. You know, we had Eric Gibson on the show last week. Hank Gibbs has joined us a few times. We had a lot of players on the offseason. So just appreciate you being real with us and not killing me for asking. you know, why didn't you run it?
Fair question. Fair question. We failed. I failed.
Yeah.
Not afraid of that.
I think it's exciting what the Bears are doing, Coach.
Thank you.
So it's hard for me to say fail in the same thing, but I know you look at it differently than we do. But
we went there to win.
We're rooting for you this weekend. UC Davis, 6th. Montana State, 5th. Northern Arizona, 22nd. Next three games for the UNC Bears.
Yep. So exciting time.
Go get them, Coach.
Thank you.
All right, my friend. Football 52. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or 1310kfka.com.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.